You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, Assessment and Treatment of Diffuse Large B-Cell Lymphoma, Considering the Role of Antibody Therapeutics as Part of a Novel Treatment Paradigm. Today, we'll discuss how treatment has evolved for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma during the past few years, with a focus on the various immunotherapy approaches that are used currently. My name is Lauren Scott, and I'm very happy to be here to host today's podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Mehdi Hamadani, Professor and Chief of Hematologic Malignancies and the Cancer Center Scholar Endowed Chair at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. Hello, Dr. Hamadani. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy to have you here.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure, and thank you for hosting me.
Great. So let's get started. Dr. Hamadani, one of the most exciting phenomena in medicine is the explosive development of immunotherapies across all of oncology. And this is an area of enormous progress in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Would you tell us, from your own perspective, a little about the evolving role of immunotherapies in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma? Where are we today in terms of currently available and immunotherapies that are emerging?
So I like the word explosive development, right? Because when we specifically talk about immunotherapies and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, we have had immunotherapies for nearly 3 decades now. But what's unique is the first 2.5 decades was all only a single antibody-based platforms led by rituximab. And in the last decade, there is a remarkable proliferation of immunotherapies for patients with large B-cell lymphomas. So we have gone beyond just rituximab, just monoclonal antibodies. We have novel monoclonal antibodies like tafasitamab in second-line setting and beyond. We have antibody-drug conjugates like polatuzumab vedotin and loncatuximab tazarine. We have at least 2 FDA-approved bispecific antibodies in clinic, and more approvals are expected. And 3 different CAR T-cell therapy platforms are also available as cellular immunotherapies for these patients. So a lot of development, the pace of development has been remarkable. Great news for patients because they have more shots at cure. It's our job now to figure out how to incorporate these treatments, because some immunotherapy options are available in frontline settings. Some options are available in second-line setting and beyond, like CAR T-cell therapy, tafasitamab. And then there are few options that, as of right now, are mostly available in third-line setting, like bispecific antibodies, ADCs, like loncatuximab tazarine. But it is likely that in the coming years, these immunotherapy options may be available in earlier lines of therapies as well as more data from clinical trials emerge.
It sounds like we've made an enormous amount of progress, and great to hear your perspective on that. You did mention antibody drug conjugates. We have 3 of those available right now in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, an area of excitement, I would say, across oncology. But specifically for aggressive lymphoma such as diffuse large B-cell, why are these drugs important, and what is their place, and why develop ADCs for this area, this setting?
So it's a great question, right? I think what a lot of people don't realize is that ADCs technically combine not only the targeted nature of an antibody as an immunotherapy, but also the potency of chemotherapy in controlling and eradicating cancer cells. The audience may know that first-generation antibodies like rituximab have very little direct tumor cell killing effect. They do have it, but they mostly depend on antibody-dependent cellular toxicity, or ADCC, to affect tumor control. The great thing about antibody-drug conjugates is that the antibody part of the drug is used for targeted delivery of a potent chemotherapy-like agent inside the cancer cell, then that chemotherapy-like agent or payload or immunotoxin is then directly responsible for affecting lymphoma cell killing in case of diffuse large B-cell lymphomas. So I think that is the strength of the ADC-based therapies, is that it is combining the power of immunotherapy with the power of immunotoxins together in a single drug.
That sounds very powerful. So they have similar MOAs, but different depending on the antibody target and the cytotoxic payload that's used. The first one I'd like to ask you about is polatuzumab vedotin, or POLA, because this is now a standard of care in combination with rituximab and CHP in the frontline setting. It's also used in combination with bendamustine and rituximab in the second line or later setting. CD79B, is that a novel target in lymphoma? Why does that make sense? And as far as POLA itself, how are you personally using it? Do you use it frontline? Do you save it for later? Is there a particular patient profile that when you see that patient, you think, I want to use POLA in that patient? How does that work for you in your practice?
It's a great question, right? So CD79B certainly is a novel target. The great thing about CD79B is that it is promiscuous on the surface of lymphoma cells. It is reliably expressed not only on diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, but also on other B-cell lymphomas. And polatuzumab uses the CD79B receptor to gain entry inside the cancer cell. And then through the lysosomal degradation process, it releases a potent immunotoxin called MMAE inside the cancer cell that then arrests the division or mitosis of the lymphoma cells. Now, you rightly pointed out that polatuzumab is approved not only in frontline setting, but originally in the relapse refractory setting in combination with bendamustine and rituxan, a regimen we call POLA-BR. So in my practice, polatuzumab is a fundamental part of lymphoma management now. Based on the results of the POLARIX trial, polatuzumab is now FDA approved in combination with rituximab, doxorubicin, cyclophosphamide, and prednisone, the so-called R-CHIP regimen, in newly diagnosed aggressive lymphoma patients with an IPI score of more than 1. So I do routinely use POLA-R-CHIP regimen in the first-line setting. I am aware of the data that this regimen may be more active in patients with the so-called ABC subtype of aggressive lymphoma. But in my practice, since we don't do gene expression profiling to determine the cell of origin, we use Hahn's algorithm, which is not perfect. So I'm not using ABC versus GCB subtypes to restrict POLA-R-CHIP use to only the non-GCB subset. In eligible patients, I offer it to all patients, acknowledging that the regimen may be more powerful in patients with the non-GCB subtype. The second setting where I frequently use polatuzumab, it is a very useful agent if patients have not seen polatuzumab in the frontline setting, or if they were not refractory to polatuzumab in the frontline setting. This is a very useful drug to use as a bridging treatment to control the disease by some time as we are preparing patients to receive CAR T-cell therapy. And the third scenario where I occasionally use polatuzumab is second line or subsequent treatments in rather unfit patients who are not cell therapy candidates. In those patients, this regimen, as long as they don't have clinically significant pre-existing neuropathy, this is a go-to regimen in such scenarios.
Thank you. I think your perspective on that is really helpful. Just wondering about IPI score. How do you look at IPI score to determine whether pullas, what you're going to use, or just R-CHOP in the frontline setting?
Yeah, so the AP score, or the International Prognostic Index score, the main eligibility criteria for the POLARIX trial was limiting study enrollment to patients with an IPI score of more than one. And that is exactly what I do in my clinical setting. So you rightly alluded to that patients with either early stage disease where the IPI score may be zero or one, or advanced stage patients who happen to have an IPI score of one because they already have a score of one because of advanced stage disease. And it's very unusual to see an IPI score of one in advanced stage disease. But if I happen to see a patient like that, I think R-CHOP is very reasonable for those patients.
Let's switch gears. I think one of the targets that most people are familiar with in lymphoma is CD19, right? We have tafasitamab. We have CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy, and then we have a CD19-targeted antibody drug conjugate called loncatuximab tesirine, or Lonca. As a lymphoma expert who has lots of experience with all of these approaches of targeting CD19, when is the right time to use one over the other? Is there a specific patient profile in your mind for whom you think Lonca might be the best choice? What are your thoughts on sequencing? Do you worry about CD19 loss for next line of CD19 targeted therapy? How does all that work in your practice?
So Lauren, this is an extremely important question. CD19 sequencing, and in which setting and which patient profile to use a given CD19 directed therapy is extremely important. So let's tackle the profile where these options may be preferred over a different one. Let's start with tafasitamab. Tafasitamab-lenalidomide combination is a useful option, but I often ask people to remember the particular patient population that the L-MIND trial investigating tafa-len enrolled. So the trial restricted eligibility to patients who had more than 3 prior lines of therapy, and enrich the study population for second-line treatments. It didn't allow double-hit patients, and it did not allow patients with primary refractory disease or early treatment failure. So if I happen to see a patient who is older, unfit, in second line, without double-hit, and without the high risk of primary refractory disease or early relapse, I think that's a patient profile where tafa-len is a useful option in second line. The activity does drop off if you use it in later lines of therapy. And tafa-len has modest, if any, activity in patients with prior CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapies. The other CD19-directed approach is loncatuximab tesirine, which is a CD19-directed antibody drug conjugate. As of today, the drug is FDA-approved in third and later line settings. LOTIS-2 trial that led to Lonca approval did allow patients with primary refractory disease, double-hit patients, CAR failures, and these patients were more heavily pretreated. So right now, off trial, I do use Lonca in third line settings and beyond. We expect the results of LOTIS-5 trial to be available later in 2025 or early 2026. And if that trial is positive, that may make this ADC become available in second line setting. The second important attribute is that I have been involved in studies that looked at using Lonca as a bridge before CAR T-cell therapy, and we have published that it does not affect the efficacy of later CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapies. And we have also used Lonca after CD19-directed CAR T-cell therapy failure, and we do see a nice level of activity in that setting. So that's another scenario where I do use loncatuximab when appropriate, and its use is definitely around the pericar space some data to support bridging and definitely more data to show that it is active in patients with CAR T-cell failure, particularly those patients who relapse a little later after receiving CAR T-cell therapies.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Hamadani. I would think that's very reassuring for a lot of physicians to hear your thoughts on sequencing and CD19 sequencing in particular. Before we wrap this up, I would really like to talk about CD30 as well. I think most people are familiar with brentuximab vedotin in the Hodgkin lymphoma space. And now it's available in the non-Hodgkin's and diffuse large B-cell lymphoma space. And just curious from your perspective, why is CD30 targeting important in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? And what are your thoughts on testing? Should everybody be tested? Should it be earlier in therapy, later on therapy? How do you personally incorporate brentuximab into your treatment algorithm?
Yeah, so this is almost kind of hot off the press, right? The results of the Echelon 3 study just got published early in 2025 in Journal of Clinical Oncology. As a reminder, Echelon 3 was a randomized trial that was comparing a combination of lenalidomide rituxan against lenalidomide rituxan plus brentuximab vedotin in patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And I find the results of the study not only fascinating, but also surprising. The brentuximab vedotin containing arm not only showed higher response rates, but it also translated into more durable responses, better progression free, as well as overall survival. Now, CD30 testing is an interesting question. Not all diffuse large B-cell lymphoma patients express CD30 on the surface of the tumor cells. And interestingly, in the Echelon 3 study, the activity, the response rates, and the durability of responses were independent of the CD30 expression on the surface of the lymphoma cells. So in my practice, if I use this regimen, I will not rely on CD30 testing, at least using the methods we use in common clinical practice like flow cytometry and immunohistochemistry, because these lymphoma cells likely have CD30 present at levels below detection by the clinically available testing modalities. And then there is also a concept of crossfire. The immune microenvironment of lymphoma cells does express CD30 on regulatory T cells, and it is plausible that brentuximab vedotin may get rid of tumor protecting regulatory T cells that may augment immune responses that are getting mediated by lenalidomide in this regimen. So I think this drug and its activity in DLBCL is more complicated than just CD30 expression on the lymphoma cells. I think the story is more complicated and may have something to do with the tumor microenvironment and impact of this ADC on tumor protective mechanisms.
Right now, NCCN was just updated to recommend brentuximab pretty much in any level of expression of CD30. So it'll be interesting to see how things evolve over time. And it sounds like you're in favor of using this regimen in certain patients. Is there any particular patient that you see them and you're like, that's a patient where I need to use this regimen first?
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Because I'm also trying to figure out where this regimen fits in the clinical practice. The area of unmet need in clinical practice right now is CAR failures. Not a lot of data of how this regimen behaves in patients with prior CAR T-cell therapies. I tend to gravitate more towards bispecifics in that setting. I think a scenario where I think about this regimen is unfit patients, patients who are transplant non-candidates or cell therapy non-candidates or who don't want it. I typically use Pola-BR in second-line setting, and if those patients do not respond to that regimen or the regimen fails the patient, then I think considering brentuximab R-squared in such patients, I think would be interesting to look at.
Great. This has been extremely helpful. Dr. Hamadati, thank you so much for your expertise and sharing your insights with us about the role of ADCs in diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you to our audience for joining us. We hope you will join us in the next episode discussing toxicity management in relapsed refractory diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. I would like to give a special thank you to our supporters, ADC Therapeutics America, Genentech, a member of the Roche Group, and Pfizer, who provided educational grants for this activity. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group, who in support of improving patient care is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials.